Blog Talk Radio.
That how you design those programs, and all of the programs that I attended, all of the education that I had, college, public, and otherwise, nobody ever told me that I was an African woman. Nobody ever told me what the history of African people were. Nobody ever told me that America is business, and without business you will have nothing and be nothing. And nobody ever told me how to organize business so that I would be able to develop institutions in my own community. So now the sincerity of all of the programs and all of the education has to be questioned, indicted, and convicted, because the bottom line is that America is not and has never tried to produce African adults who are functional, self-sufficient, who understand their politics, their economics, and their relationship to the world politics and the world economics.
America is satisfied with the NAACP, the Urban League, and the traditional we shall overcome civil rights leaders of the 50s and 60s that have been all but abandoned and ignored by younger people, sister soldier included.
I think that the dice are loaded, and that's what's left out of Mr. Brown's piece. See, there was a period of time in this country after Reconstruction where African people owned a lot of land, owned a lot of businesses, and did a lot of things. But what happened was the American government, the Ku Klux Klan, and other organizations organized in smashing that effort. So it's not that we haven't tried to own land and have not organized businesses. It's that if you are African in America, or in Latin America, or in the Caribbean, or in the continent, you will be hunted no matter what you do, because they do not want us to survive and become self-sufficient. Well, and you can say no, but you haven't lived this life. You haven't lived this life.
Scales.
You're now listening to 13 Revolution Radio.
Turn me off. Cover your ears. Because you don't want to hear this kind of truth.
You ain't got time to be playing around. You got to learn all you possibly can to make it in this world.
We're exposing this thing today.
It's not the money that buys you a future. It's your skills that buy you a future.
And we ain't got no time to fool around with people who are just playing at this.
And now, here's your host, Minister Dawood Mohammed.
Assalamu alaikum. In the name of Allah, came the person of Master Muhammad. I bear witness there is no God but Allah. I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is his last and greatest messenger. I can never thank Allah enough for my teacher, most honorable and influential. Brothers and sisters, I greet you once again. And to the 13 Revolution family, I greet you with the greeting word, peace of Assalamu alaikum. It is my pleasure, my humble honor to be back again and very excited to give the message of land, infrastructure, nationhood, and deal with revolution, reconstruction, and renaissance. I'm so grateful to Allah for those who are here with me tonight, and those who will hear this by download, archive, or maybe hearing it live, whether you're hearing it from browser, or somebody just put you onto it, whatever time that you spend listening to it, I greatly appreciate it. Especially shout out to my good brother Mr. Holicism, who I had an in-depth conversation with the other day and put me onto some pointers that I was not looking at and helped me to see some things that I might not have saw regarding this show. Big shout out to the godfather of land infrastructure nationhood being College Genesis, my Black African Infrastructure Organization brothers and sisters, Muhammad Temple number 13, my wife, and everybody else connected to me. Brothers and sisters, it's been a while. I'm hoping that you're having a happy new year, that your new year is starting off the way that you wanted to start off. I myself have, agreed or went into self and decided to make some changes. And some things that I thought was okay, I left the same. I didn't have a very bad 2014, but it was good for me career-wise and financial-wise. It was not necessarily what I wanted it to be as far as, it wasn't what I thought it should be as far as some other things. But either way, we're back and the message is back. And so, therefore, I just thank brothers and sisters, as the more I think about this and read about it and write down things, there's so much more that we need to get into and dig into when we talk about the reason why we should have a nation, the reason why we should deal with our brothers and sisters off this particular landmass that we call America. And why, in fact, Black nationalists, some may have it screwed up, some may not really know what direction they're going. But either way, I don't want to talk in circles, so let me get right down into this. So my monologue reads this, brothers and sisters. The title of the show is, What is the Endgame? And the answer is, the monologue reads like, what exactly are we doing this for? How long do we plan on doing this? Do we even know what the this of revolting and revolution is anymore? In this day and time, we need more than an ongoing, outdated model of execution that is endless. The question again is, what's the end game? Honorable Elijah Muhammad says to us in our lessons, in actual facts, he says, what are the exact square miles of useful land that is used every day by the total population of the planet Earth? And the answer is the useful land that is used every day by the total population of the planet Earth is 29 million square miles. So hopefully you heard Sister Soldier in the beginning. I had this clip for two shows ago, but somehow my replay of capture it did not capture it, and there were some things I didn't understand about it. But I think that it's more fitting for what we're going to talk about today. In that clip, she did mention that if you try to do something here in the Caribbean or elsewhere, you will be hunted. Now, most of you who are conscious or nationalists or in some kind of movement, you will agree that what she said is 1,000% truth, because if you do try to do something that's independent, that's outside of their control, that's outside of their grip and their clutches, you will be hunted, you will be suppressed. And so therefore, if you look at it that way, it gives you kind of a bleak future. And some take up the model that we need to just basically resist within the country of America. Some take up the model that we all need to go and never ever deal with the country of America. But if you look at the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's actual fact, saying that the useful land that is used every day by the total population, and I do mean total, of the planet Earth is 29 million square miles. Whether you agree with that or you don't, that means that there is plenty of Earth for you and I to acquire some territory of our own and begin to build on it. But where I think that some of you are twisted at is I think that you are twisted at the reason why we should do so. And the reason being is that you've been caught up by a lot of different myths and slander, like, well, that's going back to Africa. That's the Back to Africa movement. Or you guys are dashiki wearing, you know, Hotep and this and the next thing. And what you don't realize is this is a very real solution to a problem. Because you could be going around in circles. You could be going in a certain direction for so many years. And you will bear witness, brothers and sisters, is that if you don't really know exactly what your ending point or your destination is, you could be going for so long and not even really realize that you don't even know where you're going anymore. And so what ends up happening to you and I, we get caught up in the tactical way of living life and the tactical way of practicing whatever faith, whatever culture that we're a part of, and not realizing, listen, if you are to be successful, if I am to be successful, if we are to be successful, we got to keep asking ourselves, what's the end game? You know, me, Minister Dawood, I grew up in a city, small city, at the far, far corner of Brooklyn called Coney Island. And every summer, until I was the age of maybe 12 or 13, my mom used to send me to summer camp in a white neighborhood that was a mix of Italians and Jews, but mostly Jews, specifically Russian Jews, entitled Brighton Beach. And then later on, I went into the deep Italian neighborhoods of Sheepshead Bay and Bensonhurst for middle school as well as high school. But when I was in, you know, when I was in Brighton Beach, I would go there for regular school, and then my mom would turn around and send me there for summer camp. Now, just sit back and you imagine that for a second, because most of you are not from New York, so you don't really know the landscape. But the reality of it is, if you saw Do the Right Thing, and you saw what happened in Do the Right Thing, that is a fraction, that's not even a fraction of a fraction, of the racist bullcrap that you would have had to go through. If you would have had to go to school, you would have had to live, God forbid you lived, or you would have had to go to summer camp in Brighton Beach and Bensonhurst. And so therefore, what I learned very early on at a very young age going to camp in Brighton Beach every year, every summer, where it was only four black boys there, this camp was supposed to be free. And the person that was running the camp was embezzling the money. You can look it up online. His name was Stewart, and he, you know, went to jail for a certain amount of years for embezzling the money. We was paying this dude $600 a year. And he was supposed to be free, but he was charging. But either way, the reality of it was this. Some of you are not old enough to remember the Rocky movies, Rocky 1, 2, 3, and 4. But in Rocky 2, Carl Weathers, a black man, rose to fame by playing the role of, and I forget the gentleman's name that he played, Apollo Creed. And so in this movie, Apollo Creed was a bad man. And somebody later on told me that Apollo Creed, or Carl Weathers, had studied Muhammad Ali in order to do this role. He was a bad man. He would skip. He did the rope-a-dope. He was, oh, my God. He was a bad man in that movie. And he was whooping Rocky's white behind. I'm going to say something else. So either way, at the end of the movie, Rocky hangs in there and he wins the fight by, you know, being up when the bell rings, and he wins. But here's where I got my first education on white people and how they deal with you. So we get outside the movie, right? And, you know, if you saw a Kung Fu movie, what would you do as a child? You basically would, everybody would be outside trying to interact the movie or act out the movie. Outside of this movie, all of these white boys would say, I'll be Rocky, you be the nigger. Nobody paid attention to the fact that I was there. No counselor stopped them from saying that. In fact, even the counselors were saying, I'll be Rocky, you be the nigger. And it was me and two other dudes, because I told you it was only four black dudes in the whole camp, being me, my brother, and two other guys. And by the way, they all called us, all four of us, they called us Leroy. So when it dawned on them that they had authentic people there, then they would say, do you mind being a nigger while I be Rocky? That was my first dealing with white supremacy. That was my first dealing with racism. Nobody tried to stop it. Nobody complained about it. Nobody gave a damn how I felt about it. And that's just one view of what I went through in those terrible 7 or 8 or maybe 9 years going to the summer camp, because I was under their system, I was under their authority, and I had to shut up and do what they wanted to do. And not only that, but my mother knowingly put me under that system and told me to shut up because it's a better life than what you would do within the ghetto. Never mind the fact that if I would have been in the ghetto, yeah, I wouldn't have gone to the movies. And maybe I wouldn't have swam in the pool. And maybe I wouldn't have been able to play the sports they played, even though I'm pretty sure I would have been able to. But the one thing I know I would have never went through is, I'll be Rocky and you be the nigger. And that was the beginning of my foray and sojourn here in America dealing under some racist system. So years later, I went through a lot of other things because I ended up working in Bensonhurst this summer that Yusef Hawkins got killed. And I was working at a Roy Rogers at Sheepshead Bay, I believe. And we used to have to go home. And every night we went home, white people were yelling out Joey Farmer to us as they were driving by. It was terrible, man. You see that in a movie. I lived that. And so I had enough of a dosage of these people, and they're gone. I'm coming so close to losing my righteousness on this phone here. But either way, that was my dealings with them, and they gave me a healthy dose of what life would be if they was in control and I had no say-so about it. You understand what I'm saying? How my mentality began to be formed? So at 19, I go to college, I fail, I come back, and they send me up to Albany. And now I'm here, and I come into the Nation of Islam as a 19-year-old man. And in the Nation of Islam, their goal, their model, our goal, our model, is that you are to build a nation within a nation. And I heard from many different leaders that eventually we were to have some contacts on the continent, and that excited me. But understand that the reason why it excited me is for a different reason than many other people. It did not excite me because I, quote, unquote, hated white folks. It did not excite me because I went through what I went through when I was younger. It excited me because I was an intelligent young black man, and when I was younger, I was able to ascertain that if I was to stay under these people's rule, if I was to stay under their authority, that I would never, ever really experience the fullness of life, because I can remember feeling suffocated, and I was forced to go back to that camp every summer. Now, that's not nothing like a Jewish concentration camp, and it's nothing like a Japanese internment camp, but imagine the psychological damage that you go through where you have to be called Leroy every summer by white folks, and you know, they're talking about your people, and you come out of Rocky, a movie that everybody loves, and the only thing that they could say to you is, I'll be Rocky, you be the nigger. Think about that for a second. So I come into the Nation, and for years they're telling me that we would give our money, our time, our energy, and we would build a nation within a nation, and unfortunately, that didn't happen. Now, I want to say this before I go off, and this is completely off of my intended way of doing this, or road of doing this. But I don't know if any of you saw this article, and it's by the good doctor, Dr. Boyce Watkins. And in this article, he says, he's got Mr. Louis Farrakhan there, and he says that this gentleman has the closest thing to a nation within a nation. What the hell are you talking about, B? What are you talking about? What nation within a nation? You mean a building within a nation? Oh, you mean a farm in a nation? But what are you talking about, a nation within a nation? I never seen that. I was a part of it. I never seen that. That's the closest. If that, let me just say this to you. And this is no disrespect to this elder in any way, shape, or form. And I apologize for my past. But if that is the closest thing to a nation within a nation, then we need to abandon all hopes of a nation within a nation and shut the hell up and move all of our operations someplace else today. In fact, we need to go to where Iggy Azalea lives and maybe put a nation there. Because if that's the closest thing that we have to a nation within a nation, we in some big damn trouble, brothers and sisters. We in a big trouble. And so therefore, for myself, what I ended up finding out is this. And there's a reason why I give you my history and my, you know, my background so that you can understand where my mentality of today is coming from. I worked for many years to build a nation within a nation. I worked for many years to try to construct a nation within a nation. And I've seen a lot of the different politics that can stop you. And I've read that, and you need to, all of you brothers and sisters who hate the nation, you think Masrad Muhammad is a fraud and Honorable Elijah Muhammad was down with the mafia or whatever. Okay, whatever. But what you need to do is you need to read the FBI files. And you need to see what these bastards intended for the nation that he built, for all of that property and that land. And I mean, Memphis, Farrakhan had that. You need to read the FBI files of what they intended to do with what we had and what their plans and their goals were. And when you read that, then you're going to see how freaking futile it is to try to build something on this land, because even back then they had sophisticated plans, strategies, and tactics from doing it, which means that they were not, that you were never going to do it. You were never going to do it. And so therefore, the reality of the situation is this. After so many years of doing that, I realized I love the messenger, I love his teachings, I love my brothers and sisters, but I feel that a lot of us in 2015 do not ask a very simple question. And the question is, what is the end game? We'll be back.
Don't worry, because he was just sitting here. I just came in.
Mind my business. The funny break guy stopped. Yes. Don't say you can put it up on me.
That's all right.
The people that fight you just walk away? Are you serious? I didn't do nothing. Let go.
Then before
me. What am I doing? Thank you nothing much. I didn't sell anything. I did nothing. We sitting here the whole time. I'm not business. What are you doing? Who about to do what? Who got to sell cigarettes to? To whom? Did you pay a hard way for what? Every time you see me, you put a message to me. I'm proud of it.
This guy right here is forcefully trying to lock somebody up for breaking up a fight.
Everybody standing here, they told you I didn't do nothing. I did not sell nothing. Because every time you see me, you want to harass me, you want to stop me, so I sell cigarettes. I'm minding my business, officer. I'm minding my business. Please just leave me alone.
Once again, police beating up on people.
Back up
right here.
Back up and get on that step.
Okay.
Back up.
Why nobody do the CPR?
No, I did nothing.
He's breathing.
He's breathing?
Yeah.
And we're back, brothers and sisters. And, you know, I did that because that lends a little bit to, well, lends a lot to what we're going to do next. But there are a lot of people who commented on that situation, that Eric Garner situation, and they never actually watched the video. They never actually watched what went down in its entirety. So they basically took whatever the news gave them, Fox News or whatever, and they figured, okay, well, dude was out there, they rolled up on him, they tried to arrest him, they choked him, and that was that. But you don't know the process. You don't understand what went down, and you don't understand why it happened. And for myself, I think it's very important for you to see what happened and why it happened, because then you would understand why we advocate for a nation off the continent, out of the United States jurisdiction, that you could do trade with. Because there's many reasons why you need to do that. But number one, and I don't want this to be the primary reason, because this is, you know, some people would accuse us of fear tactics. But number one, and first and foremost, look at the situation. The dude was out there. And judging from the video, if you listen to the show again, you'd see that the gentleman said he had just broke up a fight. He wasn't out there selling no cigarettes at that particular time. He just broke up a fight. But if you don't believe me, look at him. I have been out on 125th Street, and there was plenty of dudes out there selling cigarettes. CDs, cigarettes, they was out there while I was selling papers. And this was as early as 2003, 2004, and 2005. And I know what it looks like when they sell cigarettes. They have black bags on them, and they sell them. This dude ain't have no cigarettes on him. You could see it. So maybe he did that in the past, but he didn't have it on that particular day. So the question now becomes, why, in fact, if he did have no cigarettes on him, did they then take him down? And, you know, if you're connected to me, you can go to my timeline and catch the video. Why did they take him down, and why did they eventually kill him if he didn't have no cigarettes on him? And the reality of the situation, brothers and sisters, is this, and it's really just this simple. It's really just this simple. You see, that brother said, it ends today. And when he said that, he challenged those crackers' manhood. He challenged their authority as being a beast, and they did not like that. So in their view, they had to, number one, subdue him so you could see it, and number one, they had to subdue it so he can see it. I don't know if they intended to kill him from the beginning. I don't know if that was their intention, but I know the more he resisted, the angrier they got, and the more it, you know, the more it progressed. And so what is my point of bringing this up after, you know, some people say this is old news, you bring it up again. Basically, what I am saying is, brothers and sisters, that when you try to blame terrorism, American terrorism, on Muslims, or you try to blame it on nationalists, or you try to blame it on conscious people, and then you turn around and you look at this kind of stuff happening to you and I as a people, you have to say to yourself, how do you feel when you don't have an alternative? You see, there's a lot of black men and black women out there. They don't really know what to do. They don't know what the alternative is. When they see something like this go down, when they see something like Mike Brown and Ferguson go down, a Trayvon Martin, an Oscar Grant, and the list goes on and on, they don't know an alternative, because to them, they have been given such a terrible view of every other place that black people live. And let's not even say Africa. Haiti, Jamaica, and all other places. And then, I don't know if you ever account for this, but if you are a black person and you work in a white office, white people go on way more vacations than we do. Can we establish that? And generally, where do white people go to vacation? They're not going to Italy. They're not going to Paris. Well, where do they go? They go to Jamaica. They go to Barbados. They go to all of those islands. And they always come back with negative information. They always come back with negative views, and they say, oh, I didn't want to stop because those people were begging me. They make it look terrible. They make you and I look terrible. And so you don't want to go, and you don't think that you have any. Never mind the fact that, you know, you might want to build on the land of Haiti. You may want to build on the land of Jamaica. You may want to build on the land of Africa. White people go hunting there for bears and lions and stuff like that and come back and tell you it was filthy. and they put this picture in your mind that any place that your people live other than in America is filthy, and you should not want to be there. And furthermore, you should not want to deal with your people. It's psychological warfare, and you need to step your game up and understand the strategy and the tactics of trying to take over a people. So let me break this down for you for a second, brothers and sisters. Because one of the questions in the monologue is, what is revolution and how long should it last? So let me break this down, okay? Here's how it goes. Okay, revolution is when you raise an army, right? Basically, you raise an army of people, but at the same time, you raise the awareness of the people. Because you and I, we need to have our ducks in order, and we need to understand what this revolutionary thing is. And other than listening to somebody that's yelling on YouTube or in some damn conscious lecture circuit, okay? So revolution is when a people are oppressed and the people begin to raise an army of resistance. But at the same time that they're raising an army of resistance, they are raising the awareness of the population of the people. Because remember, the oppressed is the people who either are an occupying force or a force that are indigenous to the land. In our case, we're indigenous to America, but we're also an occupied force at the same time. So therefore, revolution is first raising a standing army and raising the awareness of the people. Don't forget that. Do not forget that. Number two, then the resistance begins to try to wear the enemy down, because an oppressed and suppressed people are 9 times out of 10 a numerical minority at that particular time or that particular place. And the oppressors are usually a numerical majority. That's what cowards do. Being a little man, I can tell you that most of the fights I had was never somebody my weight. Do you believe that? Never somebody my weight, never somebody my size. Most of the fights I had when I was younger was always somebody way bigger than me, you know, way stronger than me, because they were cowards and they felt that I was an easy mark. And, you know, I constantly had to either fight back or take lumps, one of the two. There was never nobody my size that wanted to fight me. Never. So in a revolution, you know, you being the numerical minority, your job is to wear down the enemy, but at the same time empower the people. And sometimes the two are symbiotic, meaning you wear down the people, but at the same time by wearing down the people, wear down the enemy, you empower your own people. So then after you get that past that particular stage, then the next stage is once you finally defeat the enemy. Okay, so this is very important now. Listen to this. Eventually you defeat the enemy, you have to convert the standing army of the resistance into a peacetime protection force and an authoritative enforcement community. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is those brothers and sisters who've been out in the field killing, fighting, running, throwing grenades, whatever they've been doing. And listen, I'm not advocating that you do that in America, so please don't try to report me or have Alan Levy shut down my blog talk, because I'm just telling you what revolution is all about in comparison to the blowhards that you be hearing out there on the corner. I mean, this is the reality of it. I study war. The Negroes talk war. So either way, that's what it is. These people that you have out there, it takes a certain mentality to be in the resistance, brothers and sisters. And not everybody has that mentality. And it's a reality. Not everybody has the physical resistance mentality. And you brothers and sisters out there who ridicule the people that don't have that mentality, you mean I'm going to deal with y'all next week and the baby and first the bathwater. Because it's just, when you're insecure and you're in a conscious movement, then you start painting broad brush strokes. And everybody got to be the way you are. Everybody has to be doing what you're doing. If they're not who you are and doing what you do, then you condemn them because you're so damn insecure that you have to, like, you know, get everybody on your bus because you think if they do something different than you do, you'll become obsolete. So you deal with me? And so, therefore, when I say that the peacetime, you know, the resistance become a peacetime protection force and authoritative enforcement community, what I'm saying is that mentality has to slowly but surely be calmed down, slowly but surely be turned from somebody who is fighting every day to somebody who is making sure that the new nation and the nation that you are establishing maintains peace, maintains morality, maintains law, And brothers and sisters are free to be productive so society can grow. Because listen, brothers and sisters, you know, like, you have to understand something. Any nationalist movement that has a mind and a spirit, like the Black African Infrastructure Organization and a, just a couple of others, like the ones that I deal with, okay? These are my brothers and sisters who are short-sighted and don't know what the hell they're doing or what the hell they're saying. They understand that when you go and you try to build a separate territory of your own, that you have to, basically, you have to import productive citizens. And this is something that I have to credit Holup with saying to me. Because you know what, brothers and sisters? It's like we have this mentality, everybody needs to be an entrepreneur. Everybody needs to own a business. If you don't own a business, I'm going to kick you out of my organization. Shut up, fool. You mean, like, not everybody. Very few people actually want to own a business. Very few people actually want to be in charge of their own. They don't want to take the risk. I'm not saying I'm not like that because I'm on the road, honestly. And I hope to take over my father's business eventually. And that's what I'm working towards. And that's why I always say you don't go into business in your first year if you're in skilled labor because you have to learn the ropes first. But the thing is, there's a lot of people out there that don't want to do that. And so what happens is, what my brother put me on to, is that means that those that have that mind, those that have that spirit, you cannot just open a corporation. And this is something I was saying years ago because I thought that I was being progressive by saying it. You know, we don't just want a business, we want a corporation. And that was, you know what, that was half smart. It was half right. But in reality, the black men and black women who have that mind and that spirit, they need to go further and they need to build industries. Industries. Remember my show years ago, Black Industrial Revolution? We need to build industries. Because if you're going to bring people over to a different nation, a new nation, in which they can call their own, they have to be convinced that they would be more comfortable there than they are in the hell that we call North America. And they have to be comfortable knowing that they have a place in it where they will be prosperous, healthy, wealthy, and wise. And the only way you do that is you build new industries or build an industry, period. You can't be like, yo, come on over to, you know, my place over in this particular country or that country. I got a job for you. You know, I got this business over there. We got 5 employees. You mean, like, you jump over there, you's a fool. I'm just telling you straight up because I wouldn't do it. I got too many children to do it, to be honest with you. And so, therefore, brothers and sisters, that's what it is. That's what it is. And in the next step of it is that you have to organize the award. Because remember I kept saying raise the awareness of the people? Raise the awareness of the people, make them sympathetic. The next level to it is you have to raise the aware, the sympathetic people and aware people, you have to now organize them into a productive reconstruction force. And the way you do that is first you build industry, and secondly, you build programs for training and retraining for them to do the things that will help run a nation of our own, period. And this is some of the discussions that we need to start having, brothers and sisters. And this is why I'm not going to knock anybody when anybody's doing no more. But at the same time, I just get disgusted with what I see because I just think that, oh, we've been talking too much. No, we ain't started talking yet, yo. We ain't started talking yet because we're not talking about this kind of stuff yet. Not all of us. I mean, you know, there's a few of us talking like this, but not a great deal of us. And even the few of us that's talking like this, I think we spend too much time bickering and not enough time getting to the meat and bones of what we're saying here. Whereas, you know, you have to dedicate a certain level or a certain section of society strictly to Reconstruction. And in that, and this is something I talk to Warlord about all the time, that smart dude that he is, we have to create focus groups to concentrate talent, skills, and abilities into usable, workable nation builders. And remember what I said was nation builders and what I said was not nation builders. It ain't man and woman having sex with each other. That's not nation building. It ain't man and woman, you know what I'm saying, or two dudes on the phone at night. That's not nation building. I'm talking about physical, picking up a damn shovel or jackhammer and go to work, you damn hustlers. That's what I'm talking about, okay? So the few things that I've laid out here as far as what the revolution process is. Does it sound like me as the people are going through that process now? Do you think we've gone through that process already? Before you answer, let me answer that for you. And the answer is, hell no. We haven't. Not at all. We have not gone through even the resistance yet. We haven't gone through that. We are trying to raise the awareness of the people, but we're so screwed up and jacked up because we don't have an end game in mind that the people don't know which one of us to follow. And here's what's happening now, and I don't knock this, so before you go run and tell somebody, just understand. What we're doing now is people are so confused that now what the people want to do is they just want to go for health. That's it. They just want to be healthy. And listen, you mean like, again, I'm not knocking it because I want to be healthy myself, but what I'm saying is that we need to also guide our people's awareness to be to go through these stages of revolution. And so when you look at that, brothers and sisters, when you look at that, you have to ask yourself, do you think that we as a people, the various different movements that talk about revolution, do you think they've gone through any of those stages? Do you think they're even in stage one? And if your answer is no, then you need to ask them, what the hell is the end game? We'll be back.
But then with that being said, I also feel like sometimes we as a community, we put too much on the shoulders of rappers. You know what I'm saying? I don't look to hip-hop or to rappers to represent me or to speak for me. I just want them to make some decent music. And I think too many people, you know, look to the Kendrick Lamars, the J. Cole's, the Lupe Fiascos, you know, the Commons, and we expect them to, like, you know, be the voice of the voiceless. And at the end of the day, they're really just there to get a check. You know what I'm saying? They might put out some conscious stuff. They might put some things out there to make you think. But they're trying to get paid for doing what they love to do. So I don't expect them to really go hard at the same folks who are paying them. That's silly. You know, so I just, you know, I'm not surprised by him kind of, you know, walking a fine line with what he says about the situation because he's not trying to lose his money. He's not trying to lose his sponsorships. And a lot of times people want to drag these rappers and say, you know, you should just be poor righteous teachers. You should just, you know, represent, you know, us and speak for us. But again, who's going to put money in their pocket? Who's going to feed their families? So a lot of artists have to walk a fine line. You know, and Azalea, she's just one of those artists. She's very bold. She's very blunt about what she says. You know, and I can't do nothing but respect that. In a world where people are afraid to speak their mind, she's not one of those people, so I can't knock her for that at all. But again, I don't look to rappers to represent me. I don't look to rappers to speak out for me because for every decent rapper that you do have that's putting out good music, that's putting out conscious music, that's putting out positive music, you have so many damn degenerates in rap that are talking about some low vibrational shit that I don't want them to.
And so, brothers and sisters, you mean, I don't know exactly, I don't know sister's name, but I had to clip that real quick because I was looking for this whole thing that's going on between Azalea Banks and Kendrick Lamar and Lupe Fiasco. Man, brothers and sisters, Lupe Fiasco is a savage bee. Like, I did not know that dude talked to a black woman like that. I'm sorry. Like, I think my man is whack from the beginning anyway. Don't really like his music. I mean, a lot of people, oh, Lupe Fiasco, you got to catch him. I didn't like it much. I really didn't. But I was just like, okay, he's conscious. I'm going to support him. But, man, brother, if you go to his Twitter and you see the level of bees and suck my, oh my God. Like, that dude is a savage. That's not really good. that's I would log that under situation not really good. But either way. I'm going to make this point because the people want to hear the celebrity that I have that I call my brother, who I'm going to meet next Saturday in person. And so I'm going to make this last point, and I'm going to bring him on in. You know, the thing about this whole Kendrick Lamar thing, okay, and I'm going to bring you up to speed real quick so you can know, and then I'm going to make a comment on it, all right? The thing about this whole Kendrick Lamar thing is just the sisters. Kendrick Lamar was talking about Ferguson, and basically what he said was is that we have to look at ourselves first. As a people, we got to look at ourselves first. You know, I'm so damn tired of you coons. When every time somebody shoots one of us or kills one of us, you have to run to the mic and say, we got to look at our own self first. What does that mean? Does that mean that when I got the buckshot in my ass, I got to look at my own self? Does that mean that when I get a 45 bust in my neck, I have to look? I don't understand your mentality. I really don't. But then again, I do, and it leads to what we're talking about here today. Because the reality of it is, if you heard what this good sister said just now, she said, I don't look for rappers to speak for me, because when rappers, you know, are supposed to be drawing a check and they have to feed themselves, boom, that's the problem. The problem of our leaders continuing to push this nation within the nation bull garbage for so many years, not knowing what the end game is. Can you answer the question real quick? What did Kendrick Lamar have to buck dance and say stupid stuff like that? Because you know what the reality is. The reality is that most of these dudes feel like the white money is the good money. They feel like if they piss off white fans, they're not going to make no money. Because we as black people, we have not really shown that we're going to support them. So if there's one thing that I would, one thread of that stupid argument that I would take with it, is that, yeah, we have to look at ourselves in the way we support our artists, because they can't be themselves. They have to be a buck dancer. But let's just take this a little bit further. All of us who are employed by somebody else, okay, you know damn well, no matter how militant, no matter how black power you are, no matter how RBG you are, no matter how nationalist you are, you have to do what I call turn gray. You know what I mean by turn gray? Turn gray basically means that you have to be neutral. You cannot take a strong stance on a goddamn thing. Now, if you're making $20,000, $30,000 a year, you can be as militant as you want to. You could come to work with it. You could come to work with your Black Panther flag on if you feel like it. But if you're making $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year, you better turn gray. If you're making $100,000, $150,000 a year, you got to turn gray. And if you're making millions of dollars as a rapper, which they're not making that kind of money anymore, or any kind of good cheddar to the point where you can take care of yourself, your immediate family, and maybe your mother, you got to turn gray. You got to be neutral. And Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, Negro means neutral. You are neither this nor that. And so therefore, why do you have to turn neutral? You have to turn neutral because nobody really looked at what is the end game. Where is this whole thing going? When you rose up and you protested in Ferguson, what was the end game? When you rose up and you protested for Eric Garner, what was the end game? When you protest in Paris, what is the end game? For us, the end game is land, infrastructure, and nationhood. And what that means is if you run a rap in our nation, you can say whatever the goddamn hell you feel like saying, and we're still going to support you because we're going to put black dollars, black power, and black support behind you. We're not going to allow you to have to go to somebody else and say, well, you mean like I got white fans, no, I mean. Listen, brothers and sisters, you mean like I'm a hip-hop head just like the rest of y'all. And even the outspoken Lord Jamar, you remember that interview on, I think it was Vlad TV? And Vlad asked him, he goes, so do you think the white man is a devil? Watch his mannerisms. The dude looks like 12 termites jumped down his throat. And he first of all, I don't understand how these rappers could be doing these interviews in these warm office buildings with these heavy-ass hoodies on. You mean like, dude, you must have the greatest antiperspirant there is on the world. But that's neither here nor there. Dude gets all uncomfortable and just starts shifting in the seat and like, yes, but we're the biggest devil because we made the devil. Like, why'd you have to say that, my man? Why'd you have to say that? Is that what you say in the cipher? Is that what you say in the parliament? Is that what you say in the show improves? Of course you don't say that. But because you're on Vlad TV and you still got white people buying brand media albums, you have to shift in your chair and you have to, oh, I'm uncomfortable with this. I knew you were going to ask me, but you mean, to me, you just turned gray, my dude. You just turned gray because you should have just said, yeah, next question. However, I can understand why you didn't. And the reason why is because you, me, we did not ask and did not answer the question, what is the end game? That's my point here, brothers and sisters. Listen, if you're connected to Brother Ray Winbush on Facebook and you happen to come across some of his fantastic posts, he he had told us one thing the other day, and it was very alarming. And you know what he found out, or what came across his fingers? I don't know how he got it, but I just love him for it. Do you know when one of us gets killed, let's just say Eric Garner, Mike Brown, whatever, do you know that white people Google black-on-black crime so they can feel better about themselves? Do you know that? I did not know that. When I looked at that, it didn't shock me. But damn, like, I don't even know what to say about that, brothers and sisters. I don't even know what to say about that. So whenever one of us gets shot by one of your freaking dreadnoughts, you have to justify it and make yourself feel good by Googling black-on-black crime statistics so you can say, that's what okay because they killed themselves. And that to me is disgusting, yo. That is absolutely manifest disgusting. What that means is you are less than a human being. Because I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to bring my brothers in right now. You mean, I was at the gym before I came here. I was really fired up about this show. And I was at the gym, and I was working out, and my son was walking around. And I looked at him after I saw that Eric Garner video. And I said to myself, how would I feel if that was him? How would you feel? You know, listen, Munson, I got five children. Five. Okay? I don't know how many children you got. And even if you don't have any children, I want you to go to a very, very dark place right now in your mind. I want you to go and imagine if you were the mother, if you was the father of one of these young brothers that got shot. How do you deal with it? Now, I've seen a lot of you liars on social media, and what you say is, if that was me, I'd start regulating, I'd start killing everybody. You can't kill the whole country, though, fool, can you? You can't kill the whole country. And so what happens is that unless you convert to Christianity and you begin to say, turn the other cheek, you got to eat that one. And that's why we're asking today, what's the end game? What's the end game? Because the reality of the situation is, to me, is that you, even if you do like everybody tells us to do, you're going to kill some crackers. Even if you do that, it's a whole country full of people that want to do this to you. It's a whole country full of people that want to do this, and you can't do nothing about it. And so, therefore, to me, having a nation of your own means this. It means that, number one, if you have economic aspiration, you don't have only one ladder that you have to climb. You can climb a different ladder. And the ladder that you climb, let's just say it like this, and this is something that my brothers have been posting, but I want to articulate to y'all. Let's just say that your ladder in the white corporate world has 50 to 60 steps on it before you get to where you need to go. But let's just say the ladder in your own nation has 15 steps on it. Which one are you climbing? I don't know about you, but by nature I'm lazy, even though I'm a very hardworking dude. I wouldn't climb the 15-step ladder. Let's just say that in a nation of your own, that if you had that to go to as an option, brothers and sisters, and I'm going to skip my Netanyahu segment and probably hold it for next week, but let's just say in your nation you had an alternative for brothers and sisters who wanted to start a business, who wanted to get the leg up. Instead of having to go to the white man's military and get your ass blasted in Afghanistan or Iraq or have a camel fighter jump on you and eat your enemies out, you could actually go to your own nation and work and make beaucoup dollars and come back if you wanted to, if you had family here. What if you had that option? But you don't have that option, do you? And the reason why you don't have the option is we are not asking what is the end game. How does this all end? How does it turn out? If we're going to get on social media, I'm going to shut up. You know what? I really do. Anyway, brothers and sisters, listen, I could go on and on. I really could. But I, like I said, I have people on mind that want to hear from my brothers. And quite frankly, I want to give them that. And so therefore, y'all have to tell me what y'all area code on this is. Because I'm going to bring y'all in. Let's see. Oh, I got you. All right. So here comes the Godfather. 757. Is that you, caller?
Yes, brother, Minister Dawood, man. You're breaking it down. I hate to even interrupt, man. I'm just sitting there just like, oh, man. You know, thank you for having me on your show. Thank you for me and my brother. You know, first of all, she said that first. Thank you for me, my brother. Thank you. And then most importantly, thank you for being you. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
You know, because like I said, when I listen to your story and I listen to Hope's story and everybody's story, we all pretty much have the same background, and we see the same things. And what makes us unique is that we're genuine in this. You know, we're not. We're really people who came in there thought that we could join these movements and make a difference. And then what we found out is that we're seeing what went wrong in the '90s, right? People just out for self, this and the other thing. And then these same people want to come back now in the age of the internet and just try to run game on us and tell the same thing. And what they're doing is they're miseducating a whole new generation that don't know any better. You know?
Absolutely.
People pick up the Final Call for the first time. Three-year economic. See, you got to read the three-year economic plan. I'm like, putting my head up. Man, we've been through all this. Nah, man, you know, these young cats. This was the answer. Yeah, I was out there selling drugs and I read this. Dude, man, we all been through the same thing. You're just another crop of people that's going to recycle the same nonsense that's going nowhere.
Right.
What is the end game? You know, what is the end game? We have none. You know, until BAIO, there is no end.
I hate to interrupt you, but I know you have a similar story to the one that I had where I seen Rocky and he was like, I'd be Rocky and you'd be the nigga. So, tell me your story.
I grew up, you know how I grew up, you know what I'm saying? You know, I grew up, Rocky, the same thing. You couldn't tell these white boys that Rocky wasn't the best. I was like, that's just a movie. I would get jumped. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There was another one, too. Oh, yeah. Check this out. The one thing they couldn't hate was, remember in Return of the Dragon with Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee? Now, I have nothing against Chuck Norris, right? But unfortunately, just like the Jerry Cooney, Larry Holmes thing, you know? Unfortunately, white people, this is another thing what I can't stand, is in the media, they make it seem like we're the ones that's always talking about race. White people are more race conscious than most people think. See, they're living in a world where they don't have to really deal with blackness, so they don't have to say it. They hide behind their white skin in their white world. As soon as something interrupts their white world, their perception of the world, that's when their racism comes out. That's why they don't like Al Sharpton. That's why people say, well, Colin, why do you defend Al Sharpton? Because I know because he's there, it brings something out. It brings that racism to the surface. You know what I'm saying? They hate the fact that he's there and he has as much power and influence as he has. Now, I know he's not one of us, and he's not in our circle and everything like that, but the fact that we have a mutual enemy that hates him, I said, leave the brother alone. Let him do his thing.
Right.
Now, getting back to the Rocky thing, okay, when Bruce Lee or Chuck Norris, but I was all kids like, Bruce. No, but Chuck Norris is bad. Chuck Norris, he lost in the movie, but that's just a movie. I said, well, the same thing you say about Rocky, you know, right, it was just a movie.
Right.
You know, so what's the difference, you know? And then, you know, then when there was that Larry Holmes, Jerry Cooney thing. Remember that when that came out?
Larry Holmes beat
Jerry Cooney. He was supposed to be White Hope. All these white boys were like, yo, man, Jerry Cooney, he's going to kill that. I'm like, where does Jerry Cooney? He just came out of nowhere. Larry Holmes is a respectable man, father. They said, why don't y'all like, first of all, they used Larry Holmes against Muhammad Ali. Remember that? They used Larry Holmes against Muhammad Ali. You know, they were like, oh, yeah, because he's going to beat Muhammad Ali. This, that, and the other. Just like they used Leon Spinks, you know, against Muhammad Ali, right? Muhammad Ali's still standing. So when Larry Holmes beat Muhammad Ali for Larry, they were so happy. Then Jerry Cooney comes along, right? And then white people said, we don't need that nigga. That's when they don't need you anymore, then they're going to turn on you. They turned on Larry Holmes and got Jerry Cooney. And he was a white hope, this, that, and the other thing. Larry Holmes beat him down and everything like that.
Man.
And they still, instead of interviewing Holmes as a champion, they went around and followed Jerry Cooney for the next year. How you doing, Jerry? You know that. And then it wasn't until like 10 years later, oh, this guy was a joke. Why did we support him? Because you saw whiteness. You didn't see a champion or whatever like that, you know? So you were on point. And I had to go through that going to a predominantly white school. I had to go through that. You know what I'm saying? You know, dealing with white. So there's nothing they could tell me. Like some one of my Facebook, right? I bumped into some of my old classmates from school and whatnot, and they're like, "How you doing?" This and the other thing. Yeah, I remember, but I remember you in junior high school. You think I forgot? They think I forgot about that. You know? Yeah, I'm all right. You know, I'm down in VA. This and the other thing. But I don't forget anything. Oh, we were just kids. No. I know how you really, really, really felt, and you guys made my life a living hell growing up. You know what I'm saying? And I'll never forget that.
Oh, no doubt.
You know what I'm saying?
This is something I didn't get to, and I know you are digging, you're aching, and once I say it, you're aching to get into this one. So So now I come across this article where, you know, Netanyahu says that because of what happened in Paris.
I heard that on the news this morning, right? I was barely asleep this morning. And I have CNN going all night. And when I heard that, and I was in my sleep, right? And I heard that, and it woke me up, right? And I saw that, and then Netanyahu said, all Jews come back. I said, next time I get on Blog Talk Radio or get in it, that's the first thing I'm going to look for and talk about. Come home, you have Jews, and it's somebody, you got a homeland of your own. When is somebody going to say that to us?
Right.
You know, we don't have a home. Do you understand what the Jews did? The Jews are smart. They created a nation, a state of Israel. You know, and I don't blame them for doing what they got to do to keep that state of Israel and everything, because if you don't have a sanctuary, you have nothing. You know, and they didn't say, well, let's create a suburb inside of Paris. They didn't say, let's create a nation within a nation of Paris. He said, come home to a nation of your own. And I don't understand how you people cannot get it through your thick heads that, you know, you are never going to be have a sanctuary in America. Anywhere you're in America, think of Ruby Ridge, think of Waco, Texas. They will burn it to the ground as surely as I'm sitting here. And they have every right to, because you're in their dominion, their domain. You don't have a domain of your own. 500 years of living under somebody else's dominion and domain, and that's what the politics is all about, living under how to survive in somebody else's domain. A black man needs a dominion and a domain of your own. What is dominion? Land. Land that you control, the sovereignty, to the core of the earth, to the atmosphere of the sky. You control the sovereignty, to the seas, to the high seas, to the soil, to everything that's on there. Everything is codified into law and custom and sovereignty that you control. That's how you build a culture. That's how you build a people. That's how you build families. That's how you build a nation. Nothing else. No compromise.
No doubt. Now, check this out. A little while ago, I want to say like a year ago, I had, because, you know, I'm a big, big science fiction movie buff, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, I ain't have nothing to see, and World War Z had come out. So I went to the...
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Brother? Yeah, you got muted.
Sorry, I got dropped. Anyway, that was crazy. So anyway, what happened was I went to go see World War Z, right? And I'm watching this movie, and I'm not into zombies at all. But here's the deep part about the whole thing, okay? So the whole world gets infected by this zombie disease. And the last place that is not affected, that has a safe haven, is Israel. And in Israel, they have the wall up, and the zombies can't get to Israel because basically they have this basic wall around Israel. And so what happens is the people get very arrogant about this, so they start singing, and they sing loud. Now, the thing that's supposed to attract zombies is noise. So, you know, Brad Pitt is supposed to be like this special agent, like special forces or whatever. And he's over there with them, and he's telling them, listen, y'all got to calm this music down because you're going to cause the zombies to come over here. But what was not lost is the last place, the last haven on earth was Israel. And that's the way I look at this whole thing. The way I look at this whole thing is this here. And I don't, you know, want to be throwing this leader and that leader in there. You know what I'm saying? I just, when I saw that thing from Boyce Watkins, I was like, what in the world? All I'm saying is this. I just think that we in America, we haven't really thought this thing through. I'm not, you know, just
like I said, that's going to be one of my shows and everything. Like I said in the 19th century, and like I said, please stop me because I don't want to steal the show or anything like that. but something I have to say, you 100% hit it on the head. We have never really had leadership that really thought anything through. Matter of fact, to tell you the truth. In the 19th century, I'm gonna name off a few names, okay? John Brown Rustworm, first graduate of Bowdoin College, one of the first black graduates of the United States, founder of Freedmen's Journal. You know, what was guess what his solution for black people was? Leave America, go to Africa, build a nation of your own and whatnot. He was one of the most educated black men in our history, you know. He ended up going to Maryland County, Liberia, and becoming the governor and made it a thriving commercial colony, you know. Mm. And it created an oasis, streets, everything, built a capital city, street, like everything, made it a safe haven for black people around the world, you know, black people from America and the West, the West Indies. Edward Wilmot Blyden. Spoke five languages, right? Born in the Virgin Islands, came to the United States, couldn't get into a college and everything in like the 1840s, and then he ended up emigrating to Liberia, right? Becoming a famous statesman, and he also spent time in Sierra Leone, opened the Foray Bay College, one of the first college, modern college in West Africa, right? He urged, he was the father of Pan-Africanism. He urged black people from the United States, look, everything you're seeking is here on these shores of Africa. Build here. You know, this is where you need to come, right? Edward J. Roy, you know, he lived in born in Ohio, one of the first black graduate from the Ohio State University in the 1840s. Think about it, this is the 1840s, the height of slavery. Lived in a black township in Ohio, in a township, the white town built right next to it, became a city, and then kicked all the black people out, right? Had a profound effect on him. He ended up in Terre Haute, Indiana, opened up a few businesses. Then he emigrated to Liberia, where he became one of the richest men in the world at the time. You know, he built a shipping fleet across from Boston to London to Liberia to Sierra Leone. He built a fleet of ships, right? And he eventually became the president of Liberia, founded the True Whig Party, called the Black Man's True Whig Party, and became the president of Liberia, right? And before he was impeached, you know, by jealous people, impeached him. And he was eventually killed, whatever, killed. Martin Delaney, you know, fierce Pan-African. Henry McNeil Turner. R. Ford McGill, one of the first black doctors, right? He immigrated to Liberia. He founded the Chesapeake Liberia Trading Company. Became a very, very rich merchant, trading merchant across the high seas, okay? I'm going to tell you something. There's many, many black people that don't know who these men were. Paul Coffey. Finally, I know people who know Paul Coffey was, right? He was the one who first started the nationhood movement. He said, look, we need to leave this country, build colonies on the Africa of ourselves, and help civilize and modernize Africa and build Africa and defend it, you know? All these points in Africa from Sierra Leone to Cape Town, we should control. We should control the whole coastline and everything like that. That's the manifest destiny of the black man. Key words, dominion and manifest destiny. Endgame is your manifest destiny. America had their manifest destiny. It was see the shining sea, right? And then they expanded into the Pacific, okay? Japanese had a manifest destiny. Take over China, take over all the islands in the Pacific, you know? Hitler had a manifest destiny. Take over Europe, expand eastward, okay? Britain had a manifest destiny. The British Empire. Where is the black man in America's manifest destiny? You going to tell me my manifest destiny is a nation within a nation, within the borders of a confined dominion of somebody else? You see what I mean?
Hell yeah.
You see what
Brother
I mean?
Earl,
well, see,
are
when you
there?
Talk to people like that, talk to people like that, they can't come back
and
yeah,
I'm here.
You. Why would your manifest destiny be in the confines of another man's manifest destiny? Sea to shining sea, coast to coast, is the white man's manifest destiny. That's not our manifest destiny as a black man. That's our confinement.
So, Brother Earl, I'd love to, and first of all, thank you for calling in, brother. It's been a long time. And I'm glad that you're with us. Can you please give me your thoughts on Netanyahu and him asking Jews to come back in light of the Paris situation with the terrorism?
I think that that is like Kyle said, that it shows a big difference between what blacks are doing here and what every other racial group is doing in the United States. When you have an alternative and an option to go to a place that you can actually call home, where you're not going to be mistreated. I mean, we can argue up and down the way Jews treat everybody else, but one thing you cannot argue is the way Jews treat Jews. And there's not an African nation on the continent that has the same feeling about their own people.
Right.
And that is exactly what we need to be trying to build in Africa, something where blacks in America have the option to go where they can feel at home. If nothing else, see that when we judge people about, like, you know, we say black businessmen aren't doing big things here,
But the thing is, when a black businessman here fails, your alternative is what? Food stamps, starting over from scratch?
Mm-hmm.
When other races fail, they go home and get rejuvenated. They go home and get more funding. They go home and their brother, who has a similar business to what they're building here, has a successful industry back home, and he just reboots you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Here,
right.
When you fail, you're done. I mean,
right.
And if it's just like you said, it's something. If you ever built a business, I can't imagine. It's one thing to be employed all your life. It's another thing to have to get a job after you've built a business for 10 years and failed.
It's a long way down, is it not?
Yeah.
It's a long way down.
And you, like you were speaking about the rappers, this is what me and my friend, because his brother was like a rapper. So we talk about it all the time. You know, when they give
right.
it up, I said, it's one thing to never have made it. You know, that, I mean, there's a lot of rappers, but it's ones who have gotten a taste of that fame and can never get it back. I mean, if you meet them and you see them, if you actually see the ones who used to, like, be one-hit wonders, if you actually
right.
see them, it's sad. It's sad. That's how I feel like black businessmen are here when they fail. You don't
right.
have.
And all we do is make fun of it. And like, oh, MC Hammer used to have money, now he ain't got nothing. Instead of we trying to band together and bring him back, you know what I'm saying? Because his success is our success. Let me put y'all on hold for a second. I got a powerful sister that wants to talk about, you know, some powerful stuff. Hold on a second. Caller from the 832.
Hey, how are you? This internet.
Very good, sis. How are you?
I'm doing great. Oh gosh, sorry, my back threw out on me for a second here.
That's okay. Take your time.
When we talk about the end game, my thing is this. Whose end game are we talking about? Because we have the end game for people that are integrationalists, and then we have the end game for people that are somewhat of revolution. When we say that we want to assist, or not to make fun, or not to beat down on these assimilationist people, sorry, I'm kind of nervous here because I don't really.
That's okay, sis. Take your time. Take your time. Come on with it, though. You're definitely bringing it.
So what are we supposed to do with these people? I mean, what is your thoughts regarding, you know, these assimilationist people versus the revolutionary? What do we supposed to do with them? Because me, I've been a person that's been all over the United States. Well, not so east, but southern east of the United States, all the way west. And what I've come to find dealing with people is that a lot of them do not want to be taken out of the comforts of their European mind. And
right.
so what that
right.
means is they will input things that they'll shift and get comfortable with a little bit, long as it doesn't take away some of the things that they really, really want to do that enriches the European, you know,
right.
because they
right.
find joy within it. So we can't work with that.
Right.
For me, I can't work with that. You know, we have to be hardcore in establishing our own. And so if you're not willing to be that way, then what can I do with you? I mean, I probably can't use you on some level. Trust me, I can use you on some level, but it's going to be very minute. So I need
right.
to, I need you to just assist me with that.
Okay.
Get some answers on that.
First of all, thank you very much for calling in, and I love your point, your passion, and I would hope that you call in the future because we definitely need your voice. For me, what I've noticed over the years is that in the midst of the assimilationists, there's always fence riders. There's brothers and sisters who are a little bit towards the revolutionary side and a little bit towards the assimilation side. I think that the fence riders are riding the fence because they've seen so many revolutionary movements try and fail, and they've also seen many charlatans. So they're like, man, I'm not going to try to go on this side because I got mouths to feed, I got family to feed. And I don't blame them for that. What I think that we need to do is we need to work hard to try to establish an alternative for them. And once we do establish an alternative for them, And remember, this is something that they have not seen. A lot of people have not seen in their lifetime. At least it's an option where they can say, okay, if I really wanted to go on that side, there's something over there for me. Because as far as I'm thus far, the only thing that we have promised them is a connection to a God or a connection to a movement or a connection to a building full of people. We have promised them that if you come over here, let's just say, for instance, me, I deal in electronics. We have not promised them, okay, if you come this way, you would make way more money and you wouldn't have to deal with the garbage that you have to deal with from the European. We ain't promised them that. Only thing we promised them is if you come over here, you're going to have peace and happiness and love and tranquility. And that is not cutting it in 2015. So I think that those who are all the way on the side of, listen, I ain't even trying to do anything black or anything revolutionary. I'm just going to basically be happy doing what I do. Those people are lost and you can't reach them. But there are people that's on the fence that you can reach. And these are the people, because sis, I'm exactly where you are. Like for years I was so frustrated and I was like, man, you know, I can't reach all of the people. But I realize now that the target audience for people like us is going to be people who's on the fence.
Yeah. Far as me, trust me, I'm well advanced in understanding that there are certain people that I will grab and there are certain people that I will not grab. I truly understand that. The thing with me is that when I'm dealing with specific people and everything, I do look at their character, and that's very important to me. And the thing is that I understand that if you sleeping around with five different men that you calling your maintenance men, and that you doing this and doing that, and you all about this trifling business and stuff like that, it's a pretty good chance that you're not going to really be down with my program. And trust me, I have been around this road many times. Now, that does not mean that there's not going to be any anomalies of this. But what I'm saying is that majority of the people aren't going in that character isn't going to be down with what I'm talking about, because it messes with who they are or whatever. Now, as far as the whole thing about the people, you know, we got to promise them something. I mean, what I'm dealing with here with that is that white people are shooting you down in the damn streets.
Right.
White people are killing up our people. White people are throwing you in jail at the maximum, you know, and making you work, slave work. I mean, the good thing about Facebook, Twitter, I don't know about too much about Twitter, but I know about Facebook. The thing about it is that there's a plethora of information on there just off GP. Just if you just one dumb ass person that just didn't want to see shit, it's right there, you know.
Right.
It's still right there at your disposal just for you just to run across it. So for you to be ignorant, it's a choice in these days and times, in my opinion.
I agree.
And, you know, but definitely I'm not going to stop going out here reaching, because I met a whole bunch of great people, you know.
True.
I don't know how far they are in wanting to understand. And, you know, of course, I test their limits. But, you know, on top of that, I mean, it is what it is, you know. And I just want to say one more thing real quick. You can get back to other people. Something that Dr. Amos Wilson in the African African-Centered Consciousness versus the New World Order, he states that of a Garvey's legacy. He said the true nationalist is not obsessed with the past to the exclusion of the present. We have some nationalists whose heads are on backwards, and they can only look in the distant past. They're so concerned with the past until they stumble over the present and cannot see what is to come in the future. They grovel and revel in the great glories of the past to the absence of the future. You know? So we have a lot of these so-called conscious people out here. And he basically states, too, that what a true revolutionist is someone that builds, that constructs, not only in thought, but also out here in action. So I totally agree with you in those points, absolutely. It's just that the type of people and who we try to get, we need to be very careful.
Yes,
you know,
I agree with you.
History has shown that too. So that's it.
Hey,
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sister. I mean, this was a fantastic call. I hope that you don't be a stranger to the show and you come back. But thank you very much for the time that you spent with us, and much love to you. I agree with all everything that you said, 1,000%.
All right. Thank you, and you have a good day, and see you online.
Yes, ma'am. You too. Take care. Y'all there? Brothers, are you
yes,
there?
Sir. Hey, how you doing, brother?
Right. Go get a checkup or something.
Yeah, that was just a comment. That was fantastic, was it not?
Oh yeah, she was on point. Yeah, she was really, really on point.
Uh-oh.
You know,
uh-oh.
For
uh-oh.
Being nervous,
the
whatever. She was really on point. You gotta get the applause. The applaud thing. Every time Holo comes on my show, I get the little applaud soundbite.
I appreciate it. How y'all doing,
brother?
Doing good.
Real well. Yeah. Oh, wait. Is today your birthday, Earl?
No. Last week.
Oh, last week. Okay. Yeah. I just saw it. I'm like, hey, happy birthday.
Yeah. Thank you.
What's up, fellas?
So jump on in, big brother. What do you? Well, I guess let's start from the bottom, the top, and work to the bottom. And we were talking about the Netanyahu situation in which he had given basically an offer to all Jews that they could come on back home. And I see a lot of people is against that, which is crazy. So what do you think?
Oh, I didn't hear about that. He said all Jews to come to Israel?
Well,
yes.
Basically what he said is that in light of the terrorism that went on in Paris, he said that basically they could come on back to Israel and help them there.
Mm. Oh, man, I got to get that. I got to get that article.
Yeah, it's on my page.
Definitely. Well, I mean, it just goes to show you how people are nation-oriented and ethnocentric, and nobody has a problem with it. Nobody has an issue with it. Nobody calls it racism and, oh, you're discriminating against this. As a matter of fact, people applaud them for it.
Right. Right.
But when it comes to us, our stuff got to be universal.
Right.
It's just like I made the point before. During the during slavery, or basically after slavery, they had the slave codes. Remember that? The black codes?
Right.
And one of the black codes was that blacks could not assemble without a white person being present.
Huh.
So how do you get black folks for discrimination when we don't want a white person present in our meeting now?
Huh.
The racism and was when the white had to be present.
Right.
That's when it was a problem. So you can't.
Right.
So it's like all of these rules. They're trying to apply discrimination and all of these rules to us when we weren't the one doing it. We were the victims of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So why are
we
playing by the same rules as the person who was perpetrating it?
Or when you say the better analogy when they say. When we say black pride, and we're just talking about uplifting a people that's powerless and have pride in ourselves. And I could say white pride. No, white pride means you want to basically covet. You know, it's a difference.
Yeah.
You want to covet and dominate and discriminate. And then what gets me is you have white people out there either, like I look at some of these comments, these trolls that come on the websites and we beat them down, and either they're ignorant, I can't believe people are that stupid, or they're being disingenuous. Some people are
a little bit of both.
A little bit of both. You know, like you always say, either you're being disingenuous or you're just really evil. How can anyone in their right mind equate white power and white this with black people's pride? Now, there are some black people who make the mistake of trying to sound like the white supremacists. You know, those are just black white men in black skin. They kill cracker, kill blah, blah. That ain't what we're about. You know, even if you want to do that, we don't have the power yet. White people have real power. When they say, yeah, kill niggas, this, that, they can actually do that. You see that now when they can just join the police force. They can kill you and get away with it. Black,
yeah, like,
we can't do that.
Oh, I want to use them as an example. The police can kill us in the street, and they're justified at every turn. So when we die and when mothers have to bury their sons, it's all good for them. You know,
right.
Hey, I was just doing my job.
Right, my job.
De Blasio makes a statement that's true.
Yes.
About his black son. He wasn't attacking the police. He just made a statement that, listen, I have a black son, so I have to teach him certain things so that he can speak, because he might go out there and get killed by the people who are supposed to be protecting him. That's the truth.
Right. It most certainly is.
So what is it? What are the police responses? They act like they butt hurt and act like a bunch of babies, so you can't even criticize them, and they feeling like they're under attack. So you're imagining an attack on you, but we're actually being attacked. But we're
right.
the ones
yeah,
that's wrong, and you're correct.
That's the thing. You ever see going to a school, and Mrs. Dawood was talking about the guys bigger than him? You ever notice that when you're in the school, right? When I was like in like 7th or 8th grade, I was real, real small and skinny. You know, I was real, real skinny and small. And matter of fact, in my 7th grade year, I didn't go to the lunchroom all the time. I was getting tired of getting picked on. I would go to the I was sneaking to the library, so I wouldn't have to go to the lunchroom, so I wouldn't have to worry about somebody throwing chocolate milk on me, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so, therefore, I was real small and skinny when I was 7th grade. But 8th grade, I got a little bigger, you know? But I always noticed one thing, right? I would always have this bully, this big guy, hulking, usually Irish kids, you know, these hulking big Irish kids. And they always complain about, yeah, I'm tired of everybody picking on me, this, that, and the other thing. They would say they're being picked on, right? So that is, you know, I'm going to start kicking some ass. I need somebody's ass to kick. And they look over, who's the most likely person they're going to pick on? Me, you know? And so they come over, hey, you know, get me into a friggin' headlock. Give me some noogies and whatnot, a wedgie, you know, toss me around and whatnot, this, that, and the other thing, because they were twice my size. They could do it, you know. But all the time they're saying, yeah, and the teacher comes over, what are you doing? Yeah, but everybody's always picking. So, in other words, when you have a bully that basically want to say that he's being victimized, that's him giving an excuse so he can prey on people that's weakening him. You know, and that's what you have with white America right now. White people are the ones being discriminated against. Guess what? Man, I'm voting Republican. Guess what? I'm going to come a cop, you know? I'm going to whip some black ass,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, reverse racism is a thing, but racism don't exist.
Yeah.
So check this out, brother. We got a minute and 30. We got a minute and 30 seconds. A minute and 30 seconds. I want to go. Yeah, basically, I want to go on a round table and get your thoughts on the statement, what is the end game? Brother Earl, you start.
Well, for me, I still believe in the Garveyism theory, and that's that black people worldwide, especially blacks in the United States, will not be safe until there's a black superpower on the continent of Africa.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, hopefully, you know, there will be several of those, you know, that will be aligned together as, like, the Asians and the European countries are. But until there's at least one, there won't be any safety for any black person on the globe. And that's basically how I feel. So my end game is to build that superpower in Africa.
Hold up.
My end game is in steps. Like, I agree with Earl. We need a nation state on the continent. But the end game for me is a unified Africa.
Sure.
That's the end game for me. I think that with the countries in Africa who can be our allies on the continent need to have conversations with each other.
Carlos?
Hello?
My end game is this, a nation state in Africa. Nation state in Africa, right? That's a pipeline for black people from the West, particularly the United States. I believe that nation state has to be established by the black people from the United States. And those black people that assimilate into black African-American, Pan-African side of culture, and that be the culture, form of culture. Ultimately, I believe that we can dispatch black people from the West to any part of Africa and create a unified political and economic front. But you have to have that particular state. That's what the missing part is, you know,
right.
is a state where the culture and political culture of the diaspora is represented. You know, the thing is where they say, well, we'll just go to any African country. No, because we'll get smothered by the post-colonial culture that's in Africa right now. That's what the problem is right now. You go to Ghana, you're still living in the British Commonwealth, basically. You go to the Ivory Coast, you're still part of the French Union. You know, everything's about France. You know, you go to any part of Africa. Now, Gambia just withdrew from the Commonwealth. You know, but it has a lot of economic problems, you know. That could be a start. But for the most part, all these countries in Africa are still part of the colonial system, You know, you need one particular country that's colonized by the from the first world, the black first world in America, which is the Pan African African Americans of the first world. You know, we compete on the same level as the British and French. You know, we have that. We have more influence around the world. We're the most influential group of people without a nation state of our own. Think about
that's
that.
Right.
Our music, our entertainment, our thoughts and everything. So, therefore, can you imagine if we had a nation state that could permeate that from a position of independence, you know, that we're not beholden to what the United States says, that America's enemies are not our enemies anymore?
All right, well, let's wrap it up. My end game, first off, I agree with all of the points that you brothers said, and not just because that you're my brothers, but because I think they were very intelligent points that kind of make me excited when I hear them, just the prospect of them. My end game being a person from the movement is very simple. I do want a separate continent, nation on the continent. I do want a pipeline. I do want a black superpower on the continent off of the United States shores. What I also want as an end game is I want all of these movements to transform into reconstructionary movements where they prepare people that join the movement to participate in the building of that continent that all four of us is talking about. Because I think that until you have that mentality, you were still stuck in 1980 and 1970, and you have not really thought about what the hell this is going to become at the very end of the tunnel. And that's
right.
My end game.
Right.
Brother
oh, God,
Chief,
I wish we had more time because I would love to go into that.
Yo, actually, Wednesday night, what y'all think about Wednesday night? Can we do a Bay Area show?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, all right then. I'll set it up and we're going to do it Wednesday night. Brothers, thank you for your time. Thank you for coming. I love y'all. I will see y'all Wednesday night.
All right, thank you.
All right, bro.
Yes, sir.
It's only natural, actual facts are thrown at you. The impact will blow trees back and crack statues. $1 million rap crews full, check the six shit explicit. I crystallized around so you can sniff it. We live this, fitted hats low, conceal the crooked eye. No surprise, verbal stick up,